Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Football, presented by Texas Electricity Ratings. I'm your host, Blake Monroe, where I'm joined each and every morning by Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton. Tell us where you're checking in from, what you're drinking this morning. Obviously, get your questions in. We'll get to as many of those as we can. But first, let's talk about you being on the road, Jerry.
You're the one in the car, Blake. This is great.
I know we're both on our Bobby's the odd man out today, but you saw a big time prospect yesterday, had a good story on that over on Texas Football. Why don't you tell folks about it?
Yeah, so we're on the road. I'm on the road in the Sunshine State this week, and I was at Mandarin High yesterday in Jacksonville to see five-star receiver Jamie French. I have a video on Texas Football, have a lot of photos on texasfootball.com. Great time to be an OG member, by the way. But there's 10-minute interview with Jamie French on the On Texas Football YouTube channel. So if you haven't seen that, go watch that after Coffee and Football. It's a great interview by a high school prospect that I think is mature beyond his years. Obviously, his brother played at Pitt and in the NFL. He's been around it, right? But I think Texas and LSU are the top two. And there's been some things out there. Texas is the leader for Jamie French, whatnot. I don't disagree with that, but just remember a month and a half ago, Ohio State was where the kid was headed. So these things change in recruiting. Texas has to stay the course. I think the visit, his mom and his stepdad made the visit in April, the two-day visit to Austin with Jamie, and I think all three of them came away just extremely impressed. I think the conversations with Steve Sarkisian, Chris Jackson were all great for Jamie French. He remains in contact with Ryan Wingo, Arch Manning, Jonte Cook. Again, he's a bright kid, man. I think he gets what this is about. So when you go check out that 10-minute video interview here on the On Texas Football channel, I think you guys are going to really like and become fans of Jamie French. So again, I think Texas is in a good spot for Jamie. Long way to go on this recruitment. He says he's going to commit probably in August, right before senior season starts. So those four official visits are going to be LSU, Miami, Tennessee, and Texas. Florida, will Florida get a visit? Maybe. Is Florida State on the outside looking in? Yeah. What about Ohio State? They've slipped. Are they out of it? We'll see. But I think right now Texas and LSU, my takeaway, were the top two, and I think Texas is in a pretty good spot. I think they checked a lot of boxes for him and his mom, but we got to see how the process plays out. And I'm on the road all week in the state of Florida. Lucky me, I guess you could say. But I'm going to Spruce Creek to see four-star on Texas Football, four-star defensive lineman Derry Norris. He's an underrated kid nationally. And then I'm going to go watch Brandon Brown at O'Galley practice today. And we'll have stuff from both those guys on Texas Football channel here and on texasfootball.com. So it was a lot of fun yesterday at Mandarin. They lost in a state championship game this year to Christopher Columbus. They won it in 2018 when their quarterback was Carson Beck of Georgia. But they probably have 15 Division I players in the program right now. They have one of the top 50 safety players in the country, safety Hilton Stubbs, currently committed to USC. We'll see if that holds. Florida and Florida State off something to say about that. And then one of the top corners in the 26th class. They have a number of big-time prospects, but Jamie French was great to talk to yesterday, guys.
Well, you're not the only one on the road, as the Texas coaches also on the road. And they are everywhere. They have been, it seems like, yes, for the past week or so. What's the latest there?
Yeah, so Kyle Flood was at Louisville High yesterday to see Michael Fasusi, I talked to somebody close to that recruitment yesterday evening, and it seems like Texas confident. Texas, OU remain the top two. A&M's trying to push to make it a true three-team race. I think right now Texas and OU remain the top two. I think there's some confidence on the Texas side, but, hey, we'll see how things play out. This is going to play out through the June official visit process. I mean, there's no question about that right now. We're not hearing anything that Fasusi could move off his timeline. Could that change? Sure. Is it expected to change right now? No, it's not. So we'll see there. So, but Texas also was in the DFW area yesterday. Kyle Flott, I think, was also at Euless Trinity to see Toa Katoa, the 26th offensive guard, one of the best guard prospects in the country. I think was at North Crowley to see John Turntine. We'll be in Cedar Hill to see Devin and Jordan Coleman, and then get down to Houston area. I think Kenny Baker's going to go see Zion Williams and Lufkin this week. Also, Derry Norris in Florida, get up into Georgia a little bit more as well, I suspect there. Blake Gideon was in the DFW area looking at younger safeties yesterday in the 26th class. He's expected to be down in the Houston area later this week. Chris Jackson's bouncing around. He was at Mandarin last week, but he's back in the Texas. I believe he's in Texas this week. So coaches are on the road around the state of Texas. And in the state of California, I think Johnny Nansen's going to be out in Southern California this week around visiting Elijah Barnes and Riley Pettijohn and probably Jonathan Cunningham this week. So Texas staff on the road. A.J. Milwee's scheduled to be at Saraland maybe today to see K.J. Lacy. So we'll see where else A.J. Milwee's at. But the Texas staff working hard on the road in the spring evaluation period and seeing all the top prospects in 25 and 26.
All right, guys. Well, Bobby, first I'm going to let you tell folks about Texas electricity ratings, and then we'll go from there.
Well, are you sure I shouldn't be doing a South Point Dodge commercial between the two of you guys right now?
You should.
I'll tell you why, you guys let them know. I mean, like that. I don't know what to say. I mean, I feel like I'm like the lazy man here back at my home office, and trying to figure that out. Now, let's talk about Texas electricity and thank them for being a sponsor of the Tuesday morning coffee and football show. We do appreciate it. For those of y'all still living in Texas and in the major cities with deregulated electricity like Dallas and Houston, you understand that the deregulated electricity market can be confusing. Texas Electricity Ratings is a shopping website that lets you compare prices, read customer reviews, and find a good electricity plan that fits your needs. It also filters out a lot of the gimmicky plans on websites like Power to Choose that trick customers into expensive bills. So if you're in the market for a new electricity plan, shop TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for all your electricity needs. Summer is right around the corner, guys. Make sure you got the right plan to make sure you get through it the best you can with the heat. I've got to ask this before. I've got some portal news to go over with folks, but I gotta say this. I'm now on my last four little K-cups of my coffee that I bought. So I am looking for suggestions right now on type of coffee today. So feel free to put that in the chat as well. Let's talk a little portal, if you don't mind, Blake and Jerry. Yesterday I felt like Texas might be ready to be done in the portal. I don't necessarily think that's the truth anymore or where things are headed, Jerry. And Blake, I'm hearing that Texas is really scouring the portal right now in a couple of different ways. Okay, first of all, is there anybody out there that can help immediately? So is there somebody that is a defensive lineman or a secondary guy or a punter? We knew they were looking at a punter a little bit, but there's that piece of the puzzle because they're at 82 scholarships right now with Javion Cole's commitment. That gives them three to play with over the next 3 to 4 months here before they get back start practicing in early August, late July. Okay. The issue here is twofold. One, they're going to continue to look for guys that can help immediately. Don't kid yourself there. But they may also be using one scholarship or possibly even two on guys that they find that are at smaller schools and are looking for a way up a little bit, not unlike Javion Cole, but maybe a year earlier than him. So redshirt freshmen or freshmen. and that would go into an area of a position where they don't have the depth they necessarily want in the younger ranks. So that's one. And then obviously a big time player that plays a position there they think is just too good to pass up. So there's two different pieces to this, either a smaller school that's looking to move up that had a good freshman year, or a high ranking player that they think just hasn't really started blossoming yet. No, that does not include Cormani McClain, by the way. Some people will immediately mention that. But so Texas taking a little bit of a turn here and not just looking at immediate help in the portal, possibly looking to backfill some positions that with true freshmen, maybe redshirt freshmen, those kind of guys, that if they're available in the portal as well. That's a little new news, Jerry, from what you and I had heard previously. And it means Texas is still going to be active in the portal. It shouldn't surprise us. And the reason I say it shouldn't surprise us is because Steve Sarkisian is always recruiting in some capacity and trying to improve the roster. And, you know, they got 82 scholarships. So they got three to give, you know, maybe hold one out for a grad transfer. But I wouldn't be surprised if I think based on what I'm told, they're going to continue to attack the portal and see what's there and look for everybody. That's kind of their take on it.
Hey, let me ask you guys this question here from Justin. Portal wise, have we gained or lost more talent? And if so, which groups will be better and which need to improve the most?
Well, I think, 24 to 10 is the number right now, right? 24 transfers, 10 incoming guys, although Kendrick Blackshear now is a net zero of that group. I think they've helped themselves unequivocally from a starting lineup perspective. And what I mean by that is they brought in 8 starters from other teams. So not just players, but starters. Okay. The guys that transferred out, 2 guys started at any level, Jaron Thompson and Terrence Brooks. So you tell me who if they brought more in. Yeah. Now, I'm worried a little bit about when you start cutting into younger guys like Billy Walton. That's where it kind of hurts. Maybe Jamon Tapp, who didn't get much time early. But Texas is the emergence of someone like Colton Vosick helps with the Billy Walton situation or the Jamon Tapp situation, right, Jerry? So yeah. I think they were a net positive by far, because you just don't pick up 8 starters. I mean,
yeah.
How do you add 8? You didn't lose 8 starters. And so even if there were some young DBs or whatever, you don't lose 8 starters. Yeah. I mean, you didn't lose 8 starters. You gained 8 starters.
You gained 8 starters. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, give me
a number of guys that are going to be NFL draft picks. By the way, sometimes we get to answer the questions, in live while we're doing this, which is fun. Somebody asked if Jamie French is a December high school graduate, January enrollee. So I texted Jamie to confirm that, and he hit me back immediately. Yes, sir, that's correct. So Jamie French does graduate in December 2024, will enroll at the college of his choice in January of 2025.
There you go. And then we have one other portal question, fellas, that we'll go ahead and knock out from Joel McWaters preaches sometimes. What's the likelihood that a true stud is still in the portal at defensive line?
True stud? I don't know. I mean, then maybe we would already know that true stud. Good players are real possibilities. Young players are possibilities. Again, this is where I think that, look, I don't think it's going to be a name. I don't think it'll be a name that everybody that covers college football will know immediately. But there are probably good players out there right now. And I think Texas is going to do their due diligence on everybody and see where they come out with it. That's my opinion. And so be aware of it. Just be aware of it.
And then, guys, we also have 2 super chats here regarding the portal, both from Jack. Thank you, Jack. No stranger to the super chats by any means. He says, Bobby, could you have someone recap for the OTFOGs where our portal transfers have ended up? I only know of Malik's whereabouts. And then he follows that up with, is there a current portal guy that we could possibly take back?
Take back? No, Bobby. I don't see that.
Yeah, they're not. Stark has had a pretty strong approach in that regard. If you enter the portal, you're gone. You know, we'll give you that 48-hour grace period to try to see if we want to work something out between the two of us. But once you enter, you're gone. Billy Walton recently ended up at SMU. Yeah. Peyton Kirkland at Colorado. I'm trying to think. B.J. Allen and Xavion Bryce at North Texas.
Javon Tapp and Swanson at Arizona State. I saw Arizona State work out a few weeks ago. Tapp may start for them, and Swanson's going to play for them. Those guys are going to be impact players for Arizona State, by the way. So that was two more. Bobby, I think UTSA's in the mix for Brooks, Blackshire. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, somebody mentioned this. This is a good point. This is a fair point. Derek says Juan Davis was allowed back. Yes, he was, but he actually went and asked. I mean, there's a little bit of a additional story there. He wasn't actually I'll just put it that way. Kai Woods, by the way, the running back, the backup running back that was on a walk-on for Texas last year, got a scholarship to Nevada. He's following Jeff Choate, along with Keaton Crawford.
Keaton Crawford, yeah. But it's there's a good question Jose Rodriguez has whenever we want to get to that, Blake. A really good question.
You're on mute, Blake.
Haven't done that in a while. And Jose says, Jerry, what's a good hit rate for a 25-man high school class to be elite?
Bobby, start on that, and I'm going to look up what a great class looks like because I know.
Well, so 12 is – you want at least 12 to hit at some level on a 25-man class. Now, what does hit mean? Well, for Kansas State, that can mean contributors, starters, whereas at Texas – or an elite program that you're trying to get to, you want 12 to 15 with 8, 9, 10 of them playing pro football. So
that's a high number.
Yeah, that's the number. You don't ever think that out of 25, 15 to 20 are going to hit. You just it's an improbable statistic, even though all 25 may be all state.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way in real life. Hey, guy, Jerry, did you have something? We got a guest.
So I wanted to say this, the great classes, okay? And Nick Saban's 2008 class, and I brought this up because a lot of these guys played against Texas in that national title game. That class, this was ended up being a great class. If Texas has a couple of classes like this, you're on a rocket ship. That class had Dante Hightower, Marcel Darius, Courtney Upshaw, Damian Square, Mark Barron, B.J. Scott, Robert Lester, Mark Ingram, Terrence Cody. I mean, this class, Julio Jones, Barrett Jones. I mean, that was a class that was ridiculous hit rate of high drafted guys. If Sark ever has a class like this, he's going to be hoisting a different trophy than the Big 12 championship.
Okay.
That's a great class. That's the one you kind of measure against.
Hey, guys, let me take the mic here a little bit. I want to introduce somebody to Texas fans that probably needs no introduction to many of us. Brett Robin, a former Longhorn running back, now a doctor. Brett, welcome in, bud.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate you having me on.
Hey, Brett, I'm excited. Go ahead, Bobby. But I'm excited. I got a question for him. So, Brett, I got to ask this first. So, Rod Babers is always on the show. But I just wanted to say thank you. We have somebody from the number one recruiting class in 99 with good hands on the show.
Easy.
Does Rod have the worst hands you've ever seen? Because he says he does.
I would never say that about Rod. I love Babers. He's been a longtime friend and teammate, and you know, there's a reason he played DB, so I'll leave it at that. But great guy, fantastic friend.
For those unfamiliar with Brett, he played for Texas in the early 2000s, tremendous team player, played running back, but also played special teams, a lot of third down running back. You played, Brett. What do you remember most fondly about your time at Texas? Let's start there.
Oh, geez. You know, the whole thing. I loved my teammates. I loved the adversity. Getting on the field, obviously, was exciting. Playing special teams. I didn't play special teams in high school. I just played running back. So seeing different parts of the field was a lot of fun. But, you know, just the whole experience, there's not particularly one thing that that really stands out. I think, you know, Mac built a great culture when he was there, and I was lucky enough to be in the early side of things. And so just like building Mac's, you know, culture and of good guys that work hard and go to class and graduate and do good things after football. And so, you know, I'm proud to be a part of that. And I think just in general, that's probably, you know, my favorite thing about my time at UT.
Brett, I see that everybody is watching us on video right now can see that you've got, not only do you have your Longhorn jersey back there, but you're also got a picture, I think, of you in scrubs behind yourself. Tell folks what you're doing today, these days, because I think it's kind of cool. And that's why I reached out to you on LinkedIn to hook up, because I saw that you you were you're big time now, buddy. Congratulations.
I don't know about that. So yeah, after finishing up football, I went to med school in San Antonio at UT Health Science Center 4 years, and then I did my orthopedic surgery residency at Scott & White up in Temple. I did a sports fellowship in Taos for a year, and then I went back to Temple, and I was at Scott & White at the Level 1 Trauma Center doing orthopedic surgery, doing a lot of trauma, joint, sports for 8 years, and then a really, really good opportunity opened up to get a little bit closer to town. And I was super fortunate to join a private practice here in town about 6 months ago. And so I'm now with the Austin Orthopedic Institute and, you know, doing orthopedic surgery, joints, sports, trauma, all the fun stuff. So living my dream back in Austin.
Where, how did you decide to get into that? Like, what was it, something that you were always something you thought about?
Yeah, not necessarily. You know, I have to really give a lot of appreciation to my mentor, Dr. Windler. You know, I went to Westlake High School, and so I actually tore my MCL in the beginning of the second quarter of the state championship game in 1996. Drew handed me the ball, and Seth and McKinney, who played at A&M and on for the Dolphins, he had pancaked his guy so well that he was down on the ground, and I got hit from the side, tore my MCL. And so I started my orthopedic journey right then with Dr. Windler, who, you know, growing up in Austin, he was also the UT doc. And so he really mentored me as a high school kid and then up at UT. And so I got to spend a whole lot of time with him. After, even in med school, I went and came home for the summer and shadowed him. But it just makes sense. I mean, that's what I know. That's what I do. I've been involved in sports my whole life. So it was a natural path. My dad's a doctor in Austin. He's a family doctor. You know, growing up, I really had no desire to do that. I was like, that guy works way too hard and went to school way too long. I don't know why I would ever do that. But then I got to UT, and I just really enjoyed my anatomy classes. I enjoyed working with Dr. Windler, and you know, I was like, this is what I need to be doing. So went that path.
Good stuff,
a lot of it's thanks to Dr. Windler.
Brett, I kind of said it when you came on the show, you were part of the number one recruiting class for Mac Brown. Yes. Yeah. Chris Sims, Corey Redding, I mean, Marcus Tubbs, Rod Babers. I mean, we go down the list, Derek Dockery, Dakari Pearson, all those guys. But so you were part of the build with Mac Brown at Texas and eventually won the national championship, played for a second one. What are you seeing from Sark that you like? I mean, are you close to the program these days? Are you seeing some similarities in the build?
Definitely. You know, it's interesting. I'm not as close as personally. Obviously, I don't know any of the players, but excuse me. I feel the same excitement. I think we're really in that early 2000 era where, you know, Garrido and baseball was going, TJ Ford and basketball was going. Softball, tennis, swimming, like we're just kind of hitting on all cylinders. And that's that electricity in the air. You know, football's moving in the right direction. It's been 20 years. You know, we're finally kind of getting to where we need to, back to where we need to be, where we belong. But not just football. It's all the other sports. It's the excitement. Austin's growing. We're moving to the SEC. So you have all these things kind of happening at once. And that's what it felt like when Matt came to town. And so, yeah, it's just fun. It's fun to experience it all over again. And you know, everything comes in cycles, but we're obviously in a good cycle right now.
Brett, I'm going to ask you your favorite moment at Texas. But before you do that, I want to tell you my favorite Brett Robin memory. Actually, I think it speaks to you. Yeah, no, it speaks to you. Texas was getting their butt beat by Arkansas.
Yes.
I mean, getting its butt beat in Austin. It the Longhorns laid an egg that day. No two ways about it. Yep. Brett Robin goes out there. I think it started a little bit in the third quarter, but in the fourth quarter, you showed some fight as a running back that maybe a lot of people didn't anticipate from you. And I think that you helped set the course a little bit for the rest of that year that Texas wasn't going to give up. And I think I still to this day, when I think of your career at Texas, I don't think back to a major win. I think to how you performed in a loss in a admirable, never say die way that to this day, I could talk to my friends about it. And that's what they'll remember too. But beyond that, I mean, I know you had good times too, where you actually won games. What were some of your best times as a Longhorn?
Well, I truly appreciate that, because that's something I took a lot of pride in, is being on the road. I loved going on the road. I mean, home games are fantastic, of course. You're in front of your stadium or your fans at your stadium. But being on the road or being behind and really just kind of digging down and grinding and getting the most out of not just yourself, but your teammates. And so, you know, honestly, I loved the A&M games, playing at Kyle Field. I thought that was, I mean, I can vividly remember being backed up, you know, they had just built the zone. And so Sims was in the huddle. I think it was, you know, third and 12. It was third and long. And he was 3 inches from my face screaming the play call. And I couldn't hear him. I mean, it was just total chaos. And so, you know, we were in each other's ear hole, like, you know, playing phone tag about what the play was. We finally got up there, barely got it off. You know, ran a shovel pass on third down, got the first down barely. Terrence Keel nailed me, barely got the first down. And then it was just like complete silence, right? Like went from the loudest, I couldn't even think or concentrate or hear, to just complete silence. And so, you know, that's just one of many good memories, but that one always stuck out.
Brett, I think that was such a great point you just made, because we've missed the rivalry for the last 12 years. And I don't, the kids that are young coming up now have no idea what you experience as a player in the Texas A&M game. Because we have a lot of parents that listen to this. What can those guys expect? Because you just nailed it, but what more can they expect from this rivalry? Because these kids just haven't seen it in Texas for over a decade.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the two big rivalries obviously are A&M and Oklahoma. And Oklahoma is a different rivalry in that it's a little bit more hatred. Like we don't like them, they don't like us. But everyone has a friend or a family member that went to A&M. And so it's not that same level of hatred, but it's more of a pride. And so when you go there, you get their best shot. There's no doubt. I mean, it's their Super Bowl, and you're going to get 100% of every play from them. And their fans. I mean, their fans are their great fan base. You can't argue that. But bringing this back, you know, it's funny. I was talking to my kids, and they really haven't been alive in the era of good quality Texas football and grown up at all with this rivalry. And so, you know, I'm excited that we're bringing it back. I'm excited for everybody. I'm excited for my kids, for the players. I think that it's something that the players are going to cherish and remember forever.
Brett, thank you so much for joining us this morning, bud. Congratulations on all your hard work paying off through the years. Thanks for what you did for the Longhorns while you're playing as well. And best of luck. Okay. That's all. Say the name of your company again.
Practice is the Austin Orthopedic Institute. So we're just hit us on Google. You can find us, and happy to get people in and get them fixed and back on the field. That's the plan.
All right, Brett. Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it. Welcome, man.
Take care of yourself, buddy. Good stuff. It's great to see guys like that.
That was awesome.
Yeah, no, it's great to see guys like that who, you know, not only did he – Nick Redwine last week, same thing, right? Yep. Yep. They didn't just play at Texas. They took what Texas was able to help them go to their next level, whatever that was for them. It wasn't – football didn't end their careers. It just was a start to it. Good stuff there. I'm happy for Brett.
Yeah, look, players impact winning in so many different ways in the college game, whether it's football, basketball, or whatnot. Brett Robin impacted winning for Mack Brown in Texas. And that's kind of the thing. Sometimes some players, they impact winning in different ways than a starting quarterback. Roy Williams does, you know, who have you. But Brett Robin impacted winning. That's the one thing I remember about him at Texas. He impacted winning games. And he was part of the culture build for Mack Brown at Texas. That number one recruiting class. That class was a huge class for the University of Texas because people remember Sims and they remember Redding as the Gatorade Players of the Year. But Austin Westlake, Rob, and Adam Hall, who transferred out, came from Austin Westlake to Texas at the time when Mack got there. And those were huge. That was a huge class for Mack and his build at Texas. And where guys like Brett Robin truly impacted winning at Texas on a daily basis, not just a Saturday basis.
Well, guys, we got a lot more to talk about. But before we do, Jerry, I'm going to let you tell folks out there about Mark Saunders.
Yeah, look, when it comes to protecting all your stuff, wouldn't it be great to have one place that protects it all? Here's some great news, Texas fans. Texas Allstate agent Mark Saunders is the only insurance agent you'll need to help keep tabs on protection for all your stuff. Everything from your home, car, and boat to your motorcycle, RV, and even that ATV. You can call Texas Allstate agent Mark Saunders' office today at 512-218-8571. Are you in good hands? You'll be in great hands with over 35 years of experience that Texas alum Mark Saunders has. Give him a call today, 512-218-8571. Thank you very much to Mark Saunders for being a sponsor of the Recruiting Breakdown and on Texas football.
All right. Well, one thing that we need to mention before we get back to football talk, guys, is Texas baseball back in two of the three rankings. They're ranked number 25 by Baseball America, number 18 by Perfect Game, but unranked by D1 Baseball. So shout out to them. They haven't lost a single Big 12 series besides BYU. I don't know what to say. They keep finding a way to win. That's what's important. For sure.
They're doing it up off of Ace Whitehead primarily as a starter, and they're hitting a lot of bombs. That's basically their MO right now. Is that correct, Blake?
yes, it is. It's kind of like that old Big 12 football offense, you know, in the mid 2000s, outscore everybody. And that's really what they're having to do at this point, but hey, you can't really argue with the results at the moment anyway. So,
hey Jerry.
Yeah,
Jerry, Thunder,
go ahead, Bobby.
I said we need to do a little bit of a reset. We're about 30 minutes in. Jerry's down in Jacksonville, Florida, headed out. He met with Jamie French, the talented wide receiver, maybe the number one wide receiver in the country for next year out of Jacksonville, Mandarin High School yesterday. He's got more trips today. Brandon Brown. Derry Norris, defensive lineman that Kenny Baker is after as well down in Florida. Texas also doing still work. We found out in the portal at some level. We're trying to figure out who, et cetera. But Texas not going to go quietly into that good night in the portal. Let's put it that way. They're still going to go after it and go hard until the very end. We'll see exactly what comes of that as it is right now. Obviously, we also just had Brett Robin on. We appreciate the former Longhorn, now turned doctor at Austin Orthopedic Institute, joining us as well.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Thunder Pup has a good question coming off the Brett Robin interview. I think this is a great one.
There's a current recruit who wants to be a neurosurgeon. Which one, Jerry?
That's 2026 North Crowley five-star offensive tackle John Turntine III. He's up. He's a possible valedictorian of his high school class. I think he's in the top five right now. We'll see where that shakes out. But Kyle Flood was by that school. Turntine's been on campus multiple times since he was offered last year after the BYU game, I believe that was. But not only is Turntine maybe the top offensive tackle in the country in 26, he wants to be a neurosurgeon, and he's in the running for his class valedictorian. So congrats to him. Keep doing what he's doing. Big time football talent, guys. I think he's ahead of where Kelvin Banks was as a sophomore. If you just go watch his sophomore huddle tape and then go to Summer Creek and find Kelvin Banks' sophomore huddle tape, if you watch those back-to-back, Turntine doesn't mean Turntine's going to be as good as Banks, because Banks really took off his senior year. But as a sophomore, Turntine's ahead of where Banks was. So that's how talented John Turntine is. E-Kim asks, if I'm going through Miami and Tampa, I'm not going to Miami. Texas just isn't doing a lot in Dade County. A little bit in Broward. I'm probably going to go see Dia Bell at American Heritage, one of the 226 quarterbacks that Texas has offered. Troy Hune out at Mission Hills in San Marcos, California, and Dia Bell, son of Rajah Bell, who could guard a few people in the NBA. I think the Texas quarterback class, 26 quarterbacks, is going to come from one of those two guys. And I'm going to head over to Port Charlotte later in the week, see Myron Charles. I might make a stop in Tampa on my way back up north.
Hey, Jerry,
this one from Zach Moore real quick. I don't know if you heard of a 2026 offensive tackle from Nixa, Missouri, Jackson Cantwell, but he is a stud, and I wonder if Texas may pursue. Then he asked another trivia night soon. I'll ask you about Cantwell second. A trivia night, we're going to try to do one a month. That's the idea, lining up some guests, et cetera, to join Jerry. Jerry, you're going to be the permanent host, my man, on trivia night. So get ready for that. Do you know Jackson Cantwell from Nixa, Missouri?
Not with Texas. But yes, he's a five-star kid in that 26 class. I mean, him and Turntine, I think, are maybe end up being the top two. We'll see. But he's 6'7", 300-pound kid. He had had an Alabama offer from Nick Saban and about everywhere else. So we'll see if Texas truly gets in the mix.
We have some other super chats that we need to also get to, guys. And I wanted to read these first two that are more comments than anything. UT Boy says, good morning, man. I'm on my boat chasing the 5 to 6 pound bass that juked me earlier. Thank the Lord for coffee and football. Hook'em family. Thanks, Bobby, Jerry, and Blake. We appreciate everything. Well, we appreciate y'all for tuning in. Thank you for the super chat. Jerry,
UT Boy, you have to have a post a picture of that 6 pound bass when you bring him in.
Good call. And then Jerry's Jack's Link says, how many years of eligibility does Rod B have left? This is a donation to his NIL fund.
Hey, true story. Y'all know that Rod gets up and like runs 3 miles in the morning every morning.
He's on that Charlie Strong schedule.
Yeah, he gets up early and gets after it.
I mean, I probably shouldn't tell this story, but I will tell the story because at this point, but I once got a 4:45-ish a.m. call from Charlie Strong when he was the head coach at Texas, and he was on the treadmill. And I was just like, golly, man. I mean, you're what are you watching, huddle video while you're on the treadmill? So Rod's on that Charlie Strong schedule.
Oh, man. Well, we will use this next super chat to segue into our next segment here. But Jay Lee, thank you, Jay. He says, I rewatched the 23 season and we really struggled at times against not very good teams. Are we too high on Texas in 2024 in a harder league? I know we are talented, but that's not enough in the SEC.
I think everybody, here's where I agree with you. Texas struggled against Houston, for example, right? Not a good football team. Texas struggled at times against TCU. TCU was not a good football team a year ago. Okay. But here's where I would come out a little bit different. Teams in college struggle against just about everybody. There's 3 or 4 games a year, even really good teams struggle with. Oh, Alabama, the week after they lost to Texas, I mean, it was like 10-3 in the fourth quarter against, or 6-3 in the fourth quarter against South Florida. So, and they ended up in the playoffs. I try not to take too much from every single game and look at the season more as a whole. And were they dominant as often or more often than they were dormant? Does that make sense to everybody? Like, if you play three good quarters of football in college, that's a lot, because you're dealing with 18 to 20 year old guys. They're not perfect. They're still learning. And so I'm not as concerned about that, Jay. I can appreciate what you're saying, because I agree with it. They didn't play great against Wyoming, for example, right? Until the fourth quarter. But you look at it in the totality, and you saw a consistency level there where they never were horrible. All season, I don't know that Texas was horrible, except for maybe the third quarter against Houston. And maybe times on defense against Oklahoma. Those are the only two times I thought Texas was horrible for an entire season. That's pretty good.
Well, he mentioned going into the SEC next year, and we've talked about quarterback play in the SEC, what Texas is going to face. But what about the defensive line, guys? The schedule up for the entire season here. And obviously Michigan going to be the toughest out-of-conference game. But what's y'all's thoughts on the DL that Texas is going to face this upcoming season?
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday, Blake, and it kind of made me think, we need to look at this, because we talked about Washington won the Joe Moore Award last year. And that's the goal for Texas this year, is to win the Joe Moore Award as the best offensive line in college football. Well, I'm here to say this. If they play well against this schedule, they may win it. I mean, if you look at all your 25 mock drafts early, Michigan, both of those D tackles, Kenneth Grant, Mason Graham, first rounders, Mason Graham for sure, Kenneth Grant in some mocks, right? Oklahoma, we'll see. Georgia, obviously a D lineman in the first round there, and they'll have a tremendous defensive front there. You look at Texas A&M, Nick Scowerton, in mock drafts as a first rounder, the Purdue transfer from Bryan High School, Shamar Turner. Texas is going to face, Bobby, some tremendous individual defensive lineman, Michael Williams at Georgia, to go with the rest of that front. But they're also going to face some very good defensive lines as a whole. So the Texas offensive line is going to be challenged more so this year than they ever have been in Sark's time at Texas. So if you want to go out and win the Joe Moore Award, if you go out and look good against this schedule, you probably are going to take home that award.
So let's talk about this.
By the way, Kentucky's Deion Walker's a first-rounder, too, on the interior.
And Florida has good young talent, a lot of it, a lot of good young talent. Let me ask you this, Jerry. If you're really looking at the SEC generally, what are the main positions that will be improved in moving from the Big 12 to the SEC? Defensive line is certainly one of them, and particularly the interior guys. There's been some edge guys in the Big 12. A couple of years ago, three edge guys went in the first round? But strictly the interior, I think the interior of the offensive line, in particular guard, yes. Center guard.
Yes.
They'll be bigger guys. Corners will be longer and faster. Typically.
Yes.
And wide receivers typically longer and faster as well. Is that the main group?
I think the outside X type of receivers in the SEC, taller, longer limb, faster athletes, I think as a whole. And that doesn't mean the Big 12 didn't have good players, right? But we're talking about as a whole. I mean, even if some of the SEC teams are middle-of-the-road teams, if you just go look at the NFL draft, there's a lot of guys drafted. I mean, look at how many guys Mississippi State has drafted and has in the NFL versus kind of their win-loss record over the last decade. And they've had some good teams, but even they produce a lot of NFL players. I think it's the athleticism on the offensive line as a whole is much higher. Longer arm athletes, quicker feet athletes. I think we mentioned defensive front, and I think wide receivers and corners. I think corners are going to be faster. Defensive backs are going to be faster as a whole in the SEC. And those outside wide receivers, I think there's going to be a big difference in the SEC as a whole versus the Big 12. I think those are your main areas.
Guys, Blake, I know you got to get going, buddy.
I do. Blake's I'm going to I'm going to leave y'all with this one question here that I'm going to ask, and then I am going to exit and get on out of here. But Odenhorn says Mississippi State, Kentucky, Florida, and Arkansas. He wants y'all to kind of comment on those games. I'm going to leave y'all with that and head on out.
All right, Blake, you have a good one, buddy. We'll see you tomorrow. All right. Be good, bud. All right. Jerry, let's talk about this. Mississippi State, Kentucky, Florida, Arkansas. Look, Mississippi State, new head coach. Arkansas, a coach coaching on his last leg.
Yeah.
Florida, potentially on his last leg. Kentucky, the guy basically got left at the altar in College Station and went back home. You know, I don't know. I mean, all three of the four are Kentucky and Florida. Florida is the only one that is not putting in a new quarterback.
Right.
Right. So three of four new quarterbacks. Blake Shapen, if you don't remember that name, from Baylor, is now the quarterback at Mississippi State.
Yeah.
So that was a move that Jeff Lebby made. He's the new coach there. I don't even know who the quarterback is yet at Arkansas, Jerry. Do you?
It's Taylen Green, who transferred in from Boise State, should be the winner of that because KJ Jefferson transferred to UCF, which is going to make UCF dangerous in the Big 12 next year, in my opinion. I would rank the games personally for Texas, Kentucky, Florida, Mississippi State, Arkansas in that order. And the reason I think Florida is a more talented team than Kentucky, I think Kentucky may, what they do, going to try to run the ball at Texas. They have the big guy on the interior defensively. I think Kentucky has always has really good hidden talent. Now, they lost some key guys off that team. But the reason I put Kentucky over Florida right now, and I could be proven wrong, is Florida's schedule prior to getting to Texas is absolutely brutal. I mean, if they don't start the season off with a win over Miami and Gainesville, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in Gainesville after that. I mean, if you just look at Florida's schedule, it's the hardest, most difficult schedule I've ever seen in college football. They literally have 11 Power 5 games. And just look at who they play prior to Texas. I mean, that could be a team that's beat up. I mean, you just don't know. So I put Kentucky over Florida, both obviously home games for Texas. But that's the way I'd order those four. I think Kentucky's got the best interior D lineman of that group that Texas will face. I think Berrien Brown is the guy that's the scariest player in terms of scoring touchdowns in their receiver or kick return Texas will face in that game. I think Eugene Wilson's the best slot receiver at Florida that Texas will play on their schedule. I think he could be a future first rounder. A poor man's Jalen Waddle, and that's a compliment to him. I saw him in high school. Eugene Wilson's a stud. And then we'll just have to see how many points Florida can score and what that team looks like. I mean, are they going to be bubble wrapped by that period in time? Because that's a hell of a schedule they're playing.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I got some other questions that we're going to take pretty much fill out the rest of the hour with these, because there's a lot of good questions on here today. I thought, Jerry, Jeff Coker, is there another portal window before the start of the 24 season? No, there is not, Jeff, but Texas could take a grad transfer in the summertime. But as we've reported earlier today, Texas continues to scour the portal right now, not only at defensive line, but defensive back. The issue is this. Look, they're looking for immediate help. They've been doing that from the very start of the portal. That's what Steve Sarkisian looks for first. Who can help us tomorrow? Okay. Now that they're at 82 scholarships, they're also looking at, okay, are there any young guys out there that we might be able to bring in that have had a freshman or redshirt freshman or a true sophomore campaign that we think can add depth to the roster and we can grow as we move forward? So that's the part where they're at right now, trying to scour the portal for guys that can help immediately, but also looking for guys that might be able to be guys down the line a little bit. That's where it's at. All right, next question. This is from Just a Dude. Yeah. If Texas gets Jamie French, DeCorian Moore, Kalik Lockett, Kelshon Johnson, Andrew Marsh, or Wilson, this will probably be the best wide receiver class ever in Texas history. Jerry, you know, we've talked about this. There hasn't been, since like 2001 when Texas got Roy, Sloan, and BJ, name another great receiver class for Texas. I mean, Cook and Moore, Texas hasn't had that all-out unbelievable receiver class, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, look, it won't happen. You never get all the guys. But to answer the guy's question, DeCorian Moore, Jamie French, Kalik Lockett, and Kelshon Johnson, if that were the four, yeah, that's the best receiver class Texas has ever signed. I mean, I know Roy, BJ, and Sloan, all three of those guys are ranked 5 stars by some service. But that would DeCorian Moore is a total freak athlete. Like, he's a super freak, supercharged freak athlete. I mean, he's just – Bobby, how many guys pretty much place medal in 5 events at a state track meet in Texas as a junior? Forget about it. I mean, it was 4, could have been 5. Kelshon Johnson, I think, is so fast and has so much upside. He's a Florida public school kid to me because he's at a smaller school. Not to mean the coaches don't do a good job at Hitchcock, but they're limited because he's a football kid. He goes to basketball where they won state the last 2 years. So he doesn't even get the track till mid-March. So he's late coming to track. So he doesn't even train for track. That kid could run 10-3 if he ever just trained for track. I mean, he is an explosive, fast guy. Quick twitch, quick and fast. Kalik Lockett, Jamie, Kalik Lockett has the biggest hands and some of the best body control I've ever seen on a 6'2 receiver. When I was at Sachse High, he had almost 11-inch hands at 6'2. It's crazy. Then Jamie French, I put my hand up to Jamie French. If y'all haven't watched the video on Texas Football, the interview with Jamie French, go watch that. About 8 minutes through, I was like, I noticed his hands were over 10 inches because mine are 9 5/8 inches. Mike Bobo measured him at a Georgia camp years ago. And I put my hand up to Jamie French. It was like that. And I was like, dang, 10 and a quarter. He said 10 and a quarter. So this receiver, these receivers Texas is recruiting. You got the super freak athlete, DeCorian Moore. Kelshon has no idea how good he could be one day. And then Kalik Lockett and Jamie French are two great body control guys with big catch radiuses with large hands for 6'2 people. I mean, that would be an unbelievable wide receiver class. Will it happen? Probably not. Probably you won't hit on all four of those guys. Nick Saban had an unbelievable wide receiver class in Alabama a couple of years back-to-back. It's very rare. Miami obviously had some in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Good stuff. All right, I'm going to keep asking questions here, Jerry. You're a fountain of knowledge, and people know it. From Cody Hook, any news on John Mills, the offensive lineman from San Francisco, St. Ignatius?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Kyle Flood was through there last week, I believe it was. I think Texas continues to be the favorite there. He was visiting Nebraska last week in April. He goes to Cal late May, then Washington May 31st, June 2nd. Then he'll go to Florida June 7th through 9th. Then he goes to Texas the 14th through 16th. I think it's Texas and Washington. I think Florida's running third, where it's been the whole time. Has 4 or 5 family members that were college athletes at Washington. I think Texas is the favorite right now. Now it comes down to closing it out in June. And by the way, another offensive line I need to mention on that, Bobby. We've mentioned here before, we're watching in the next week or so if Jackson Christian from Port Neches Groves potentially moves up his timeline. And I say that because Port Neches Groves has a spring game coming up next week. I don't think it's out of the question that Jackson Christian moves up a late June timeline to mid-May. We shall see. I'm not guaranteeing it. I just think it's possible, and that's going to be Texas or Texas A&M.
Yeah, good stuff, Jerry. Let's move on to some questions about the team for next year. Mike D's asking, do y'all agree with Joel Klatt's spring top 25 and SEC team rankings? What's y'all's opinion on it? I don't know exactly all of what Joel Klatt said as it relates to the entire SEC. He did have Texas at number 3 overall for next season. That's high cotton, Jerry, in my opinion. I don't know that I would put Texas number 3 overall right now. Would I put them in the top 5, top 10? Yes.
Yes.
I think the big piece for me, before you start putting them at 1 or 2, I want to see how all of these new faces coalesce and become cohesive together. That's what happened last year that I think made Texas a very difficult team to beat. That's a top 3 to top 5 team. If Texas can do that, there's so many new faces this year. Texas lost all those players to the draft. It's hard to fathom Texas being top 3, top 5 with all these new faces. What are your thoughts? Number 3 overall, not out of the realm, but kind of on the high end for right now for me.
Yeah, no, I think top five, wherever that comes out. If you have Oregon third, Texas fourth, whichever one you go with. I mean, look, is Dylan Gabriel going to be better than Bo Nix for Oregon? I think Oregon has done as good a job recruiting as Steve Sarkisian has in the high school class coming in, plus the portal. I think they got Jamari Caldwell because Bo left Texas. Jamari Caldwell was headed to Texas. That was a done deal. So due to a coaching change at Texas, Jamari Caldwell ends up in Oregon. He's being mocked in a couple of first rounds. He'll probably be a second round pick. But I think Oregon and Texas, flip a coin. I mean, it really could come down to how good of a fit Dylan Gabriel actually is at Oregon. Because I talked to a Pac-12 assistant a couple times last year, and he said Oregon was the only team in that league that looked like an SEC team physically. So Dan Lanning had got that roster almost where he wanted, kind of like Sarkisian in building that to be an SEC type of team. But how good will Dylan Gabriel be in Oregon system? They get it out quick. I mean, just look at Bo Nix. But colder weather, more rain games. He doesn't have the biggest hands. Did that affect him at Kansas? We'll see on that. What I like about the Texas team, though, this is what I really like about this team. I think it's a great team for Sark to coach, because teams that get close to climbing the mountaintop but not quite there, and then you bring in Isaiah Bond and Nyblacker in the same boat as the Texas guys, same locker room, same boat they were in. And then you bring in, I love the Silas Boldens and Javion Coles, because those are guys who have something truly to prove, and they chose to do it in the SEC. We've had Silas Bolden on this show twice, and he said it. I wanted to go to the SEC to challenge myself. I think this is such a good team for Sarkisian and this staff to coach. I like the new ideas that Nansen will probably bring in and how that can impact the defense. But I really like where they've addressed some things. I think secondary needs to be addressed more, right? But I love the edge talent that came into the program. And Baron Sorrell, you're older. Ethan Burke, you're older. See if Vossett can stay healthy all season. I'm just going to continue to say that until he does. But the edge pressure. We talked about it yesterday. Michigan had 39 sacks last year. Georgia only had 35, the second national title. They had 49 the year before. Clemson had 46. Most of these national championship teams, if you look at it, I mean, they're going to average between 39 and 45 sacks a season. Texas had 32 last year. If they can get that number up to 39, 40 this year, that means you're hitting the quarterback more, you're affecting launch points more, you're getting teams behind the chains more. If Texas can get up to 39, 40 sacks as a team this year after 12, 13 games, I like their chances to be really, really good, because I think they got the offensive pieces.
Good stuff, Jerry. Mike, they do have all of the pieces. So I'm not – whenever I talk about this team, I want to make sure people understand. I think they have all of the pieces. Do they have a haymaker at defensive tackle? No, not like they did last year. But I think they have all the pieces. It's whether or not they will put them together. That is my total take on that. And we really won't know until we know. That's how it is. One piece of that, and one of the reasons why I do like this team, is this question from Kingme. How many total sacks does our DE room get by season's end? Look, last year, Ethan Burke and Baron Sorrell got a few sacks each. But neither were dominant pass rusher. Most of the really good pass rushing actually came from the interior of the Texas defense. Texas had 32 sacks in all a year ago. Need to get, Jerry, you and I talked about this. We feel like they need to get closer to 40 this year to protect a secondary that has been less than ideal. What do you think a good total number would be? Not just for Sorrell and Burke, but adding in guys like Vossick, Trey Moore, and Colin Simmons, there should be more production there this year, theoretically. Are we thinking 15 to 20 sacks between the group? Or are we still thinking 10 to 15?
I think Trey Moore needs to get that 8-9 range by himself.
Wow.
Because if he becomes that guy, that changes the way teams scheme Texas up defensively. If Texas has a go-to guy like that, then teams are going to – that's a different look when you scout Texas on video than the last 3 years. I think Sorrell, Ethan Burke, they're going to continue to take steps. I think Ethan Burke will probably maybe have a sack or two more than last year. That's probably realistic. I mean, he had 5.5 and missed a game with a meniscus tear.
last year. Missed pretty much a game and a half. There was a couple of games he was limited very much. He couldn't rush the quarterback with that big knee brace on the same. But if Trey Moore can get you at 8-9, I think Texas is going to be in that 37, 38, 39 range as a team. Colin Simmons will probably throw you 5-6 in there. Now, the question is, the sack numbers are great, we talk about. My question is, you know, Trey Moore and Colin Simmons can't get four of those against UL Monroe. I mean, because then that skews your stats. They need Trey Moore and Colin Simmons need to get Jackson Arnold to the ground multiple times in the Cotton Bowl. They need to make Carson Beck speed up his decision making in Austin. They need to hit him. They have to hit these quarterbacks as much as sack them. So the sack numbers can get skewed. You could have 8 sacks combined against Colorado State and ULM, and then you look up at the end of the year and you have 40 as a team, but that's a weird stat. That's not a true stat. I want to see Jackson Arnold get hit. You want to see Carson Beck get hit. You want to see the Florida, whoever's playing quarterback, not want to step up into the pocket in the third quarter of that game. That's really what I think is going to decide Texas season.
Gotcha. All right, I want to do this spot real quick for our friends at Texas Electricity Ratings. Hey, guys, for anyone shopping for electricity in the deregulated areas of Texas, TexasElectricityRatings.com is the best place to find a great electricity plan for your household. For starters, it filters out the dangerous and gimmicky plans from providers that are all hat and no cattle when it comes to your monthly bill. You can shop by rate, but also by an average bill feature that actually takes into account actual seasonal usage to give you a real number and not some placeholder. Check out that for summer rates coming up. So if you're looking for a new electricity plan, check out TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for the best options available to you. Jerry, we have more questions here we're going to get to as we finish out this Tuesday edition of Coffee and Football. Let's get started with this one real quick. In Texas, how is Jonah Williams from Galveston Ball trending? Here he is trending to A&M. Whether it was OU or A&M, Jonah Williams has never been trending to Texas. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, the football-baseball combination there, safety, Jonah Williams wants to play safety at the next level. We'll see where he ends up. But I think Oklahoma had a big lead. But when he didn't commit to Oklahoma and started visiting around, it always gets interesting. So, you know, I know people love it when things are reported that Texas leads for like a Jamie French yesterday. But you got visits coming, so things can change. With Jonah Williams, I think the closer to home over time is going to be a factor in that recruitment. Look, his father played at Galveston Ball, went to University of Houston. His brother signed with Texas in baseball, really good player out of Galveston. They've never had kids that went out of state to college. So just something to remember there long term. Obviously, MLB could impact Jonah Williams, but he's going to be looking at football and baseball combination.
Yep, absolutely. All right, this one from Jason Wasson. It's not fair to compare this team, and this is subsequent to our conversation just a few minutes ago, Jerry. It's not fair to compare this team to the last with the attrition on the team via NFL, and transfer in and out. It's going to be a very different team with different strengths and weaknesses. I actually think that's smart because I think that's true. I mean, last year it was a senior-led team because Byron Murphy wasn't a senior. Xavier Worthy wasn't a senior. But they were long-term guys in the program that were the leaders of that team. You agree with guys that played a major role in leadership are guys like Jonathan Brooks, who only started 1 year but was in the program for a long period of time. I think Texas is going to be looking more for that from portal folks this year, maybe. That's part of it. You've also mentioned Jerry speed would be a difference. You think Texas is going to be a faster team this year. What do you make of that? How much different do you expect 2024 Texas to be and how from 2023?
I think that it's a faster team 1-85 on the roster, and I think that'll show up. I thought the 24 recruiting class had a ton of speed in it, and I thought this portal class Texas got faster at a lot of positions. Does that equal more wins? No, but it goes into a different team. Nyblack, different player than Jatavion Sanders. Jatavion Sanders, great ball skills, especially in traffic situations, right? He made plays on the football. After that, he needed some space, right? He was a 4-7 guy. Nyblack, as Texas fans saw last year in Tuscaloosa, he runs like a wide receiver. I mean, he's going to be a 4-5 guy at the combine. He could even break 4-5. But so he's a faster player. Is he a better player? We'll see. But he's faster. He's going to put pressure on defense in a different way. Bond, Golden, Bolden, Wingo, that's four guys who are really fast. Three of those guys all touched 10-6 or better in high school. Matthew Golden was 10-8 guy. I saw him do it in high school. I mean, that is a lot of speed coming in at wide receiver plus Nyblack. Javion Cole was a 10-6-7 guy at FAT at one point in high school, right? So that's an upgrade speed-wise. Javier Filsimi, Andrew Makuba, those guys coming in, Jordan Johnson Rebell, you know, he ran 10-8 his freshman year. He didn't run track after that, but Filsimi ran 10-5-5 before his sophomore year on the track before he got a little bigger, and he had some injuries his junior year. Obviously, Makuba's faster player than Thompson was at safety. And while Keaton Crawford had fast testing times, he wasn't fast playing safety. So because he just didn't have safety eyes and instinct. So Texas got faster. And then you get to edge, Trey Moore, Colin Simmons. That edge quickness speed is dramatically different. And that's not a knock on the guys that were there. Ethan Burke is tremendously quick for his size. Baron Sorrell is a really good all-around football player at edge. But they got faster, quicker, more explosive at a lot of positions on this team. Jaden Blue with a bigger role, explosive at running back. Steve Sarkisian can put a lot of pressure on defenses with pure speed next year, more so than even last year when you had Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell. Because A.D. Mitchell didn't necessarily play 4-3-5, even though he put it up at the combine. I don't think Texas fans thought, wow, that's a 4-3-5 guy running down the field. He was fast, but Texas has multiple guys. I mean, look, when you're – and I say slowest in air quotes, when your slowest receiver runs 10-8, you can put a lot of pressure on a team defensively. Now it's up to your offensive line to pass protect against these much better edge prospects in the SEC.
All right, that's going to do it for today's Coffee and Football, I think. I want to say thank you to Texas Electricity Ratings, Mark Saunders of Allstate Insurance, as well as Brett Robin, our special guest. Dr. Brett Robin these days, guys, at the Austin Orthopedic Institute. Follow him. If you got a knee replacement, Brett's your guy, man. Dr. Sawbones, I think. Then also want to say thank you for Super chats from Jack Lala, Zach Moore, Jay Lee, Jerry Jerklinks, and UT Boy as well. Jerry, be safe down there and enjoy your time. Go bring us some news back. Also, I want to remind folks, Texas, I don't think, done in the portal. We'll see exactly what comes of it at this point. All right, for Jerry Hamilton, I'm Bobby Burton. This has been Tuesday morning. Oh, also thanks to Blake Monroe. Almost forgot about Blake joining us early. Thanks for everybody joining us today for Coffee and Football. Everybody have a good week, guys. Hook 'em.